Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents What Makes You Bloom? Cultivating a Practice for Connecting with Your Divine Self by Kevin Miguel Garcia. Foreword by Jacqueline J. Lewis. Narrated by Kevin Miguel Garcia. To every person who has lost something when they started asking questions, you're not alone, and you are never forgotten. This offering is for you. You are welcome at this crowded table. Foreword. It's lovely that Kevin has asked me to write the foreword for their beautiful book. We are friendly, not close, but vibe on each other, love each other. We see something in each other, some kind of mirrored image. They're brilliant. I like to think I am too. They are funny. Ask my friends, they'll tell you that I think I'm hilarious. Kevin has a deep reservoir of wisdom, hewn in their own suffering at the hands of church, church folk, and toxic religion. Wisdom fertilized with their humor and determination to bloom where they stand. Kevin stands on the edge of the faith we both inherited from our people, the one we both rejected, the one we knew scarred us and others like us. We've both walked away from that edgy place, deciding instead to center flourishing, love, grace, authentic joy. We both know the toxicity will kill us, kill all of us, will wound our souls with deep scars that bleed out the life source until we wither up and die. And we are both determined not to die, but to live. As I write, I hear the epilogue in Les Miserables, Jean Valjean's final poignant prayer. Let me be. Take me now. Take me home. Cosette's return, offering forgiveness, fiercely loving the man who raised her, loving him, willing him to life, even as he dies. You will live, Papa. You're going to live. It's too soon to say goodbye. The love, the grace, the forgiveness, offering the stuff that blooms us to life. If there is a resurrection, it is love that makes us live forever. If there is such a thing as salvation, it is love that saves us. If there is a God, it is loving one another that makes that God visible. Take my hand and lead me to salvation. Take my love, for love is everlasting, and remember the truth that once was spoken. To love another person is to see the face of God. I believe this is the hymn of Kevin's religion, sung in the key of the truth that makes them bloom, makes me bloom. Love is the aim, love that is gentle on us. Love gentle toward our people, love gentle even toward the stranger. Love fierce enough to be kind, to offer fresh starts, love that can say, nope, I'm not going to make that deadline, hit that mark, earn that reward. I'm not going to be perfect today. I'm going to be perfectly me, where I am, as I am. I am going to bloom here. And the people sing, walk behind the plowshare, put away the sword. Put away the swords that cut our hearts out. Put away the sharp judgments, the pointed blaming, the double-edged theologies that impinge and crush our souls. Put away the soul-crushing, deadening, suffocating, crucifying patterns in which we live as though we are dead people walking. Punishing schedules that drive us madly on repeat. Competitive capitalism that makes us think we are living when we are simply existing. In one of my favorite TikToks this year, Kevin is loving themselves to bloom. Quote, my book manuscript was due yesterday. Is it done? No. I'm going to work my tail off, but I know it's going to be a little late. And I am so okay with that. I'm very ambitious and sometimes I overpromise things. But maybe I should cut myself some slack. Maybe I should underestimate myself a little more. But what's different about this time versus all the other times that I've been late on something, or that I haven't met a deadline or a goal? I'm not beating myself up over this. I'm not calling myself a bad person or lazy. I'm just okay. And now I'm going to go work on it. So give yourself some love today. You're doing the best you can. Doing the best you can. That's what makes us bloom. Kevin's words sing my life. They will sing yours too. The Reverend Dr. Jackie Lewis, senior minister and public theologian at Middle Church in Manhattan, where love blooms. She is the author of Fierce Love, A Bold Path to Ferocious Courage and Rule-Breaking Kindness That Can Heal the World. Listen to this first, an introduction to what makes you bloom. I'm making some inferences about you, the person who purchased this book and is listening to it. I'm assuming you've got some Christian faith background. Whether or not you call yourself a Christian now doesn't concern me, to be honest. I just want you to be honest with yourself. I'm also assuming that you maybe have some beef with the church, or at least some misgivings. You grew up in it, or you converted later in life. Either way, you probably wholeheartedly believed, or at least you wanted to. And you tried really, really hard for a really, really long time to say with all the conviction you could muster that you believed like everyone else did around you. Until you didn't. And then things probably got dicey. Your friends from church began asking you to get coffee, maybe alongside the pastor to ask, "How's your walk with Jesus?" You searched for the words to describe how you and Jesus were on a break, because you were concerned about the church's behavior issues. You talked about your experiences, how your gay friend was more loving than that one asshole on the committee you serve on at church. You recounted how your Muslim friends invited you to break fast with them after Ramadan. You wondered if a loving God could send people to an eternal, conscious torment and still be loving. And even after telling them how this new way of thinking, this new way of believing felt more true, how it might be drawing you closer to God even, their concern boiled over. And when you told them that there's no need to be concerned, they fired off. You never really believed. You're doing this for the attention. You've got an unspoken sin that you don't want to give up. You're being deceived by the devil. You just really haven't met Jesus yet. You're abandoning God. You're abandoning the church. You're abandoning us. You. It's always you. It's your fault this is happening. And eventually, you couldn't take it anymore because these fucking people would not listen to you. People you have loved and respected forever. Some who you swore fidelity unto death to suddenly attached terms and conditions to their love, withdrawing their respect and offering punishment instead. And you left, either silently or loudly. Regardless, there's a pang in your chest when you realize how the church will erase you from community memory. There's a feeling of anger brewing inside when you consider all the shit they are going to talk about you. But still, you would never go back. You could never go back. And here you are, listening to this and probably wondering if there's something beyond the pain of letting go of something and a bunch of someones you really loved. You are wondering if there's still a place for you in the family of God. Or maybe you're just wondering what your home is in this vast universe, on this planet, with this beloved family of things we call the physical world. I'm happy to say yes. There is something beyond heartache. There is something beyond loss. There is something beyond the small conceptions the limited perceptions of love that we have placed upon it. There's something beyond a shallow understanding of ancient holy books and beyond the emotional highs created by smokescreens, lights, and cinematic-level music. There is more. So much more. And the best part, you don't have to go anywhere, do anything, or be anybody special to experience it. My love, I want to tell you about how I found peace. And I say peace with a capital P because it is God to me, the same way I say love with a capital L. The sweet, delicious, unwavering presence of peace is always available to us. It is merely our awareness that is impaired. Only our perceptions limit our ability to see and feel love, to experience peace here and now. Let me give you some of my story. I've been deconstructing my faith since before it was cool, before the term was used in relation to Christian faith, before TikTok evangelists for both sides stitched each other's content for supremacy, before pastors took any of what we were saying seriously. We've come a long way in the last decade. And to be frank, a long way looks like a spiritual refugee camp outside the empire's walls. One way I heard Nadia Boltz-Weber put it in a podcast episode we did together, out here in the wild unknown, past our normal spaces, it feels like we're on the same team. But we only score points if we are shitty to one another. We still try to out-holy each other. I see people get into fights online looking for an enemy still lurking in anyone and anything that looks like it could be their trauma returning. Capitalism, patriarchy, and empire have us turning on one another instead of turning inward. Our bodies are traumatized, and our minds can scarcely find peace. I went on a big-ass mission trip after college. 11 months to 11 countries. I only made it to 7 of those months. With 49 of the most purity-cultured, indoctrinated, emotionally damaged, codependent, sold-out Christians I've ever met. We bopped around the world, and when times got hard, man, did our trauma show itself off. It was a huge mess, and we all knew it. Some of us smiled and towed the party line, ignoring bad behavior, ignoring our legit complaints. We barely knew how to be kind to one another, let alone take responsibility for our care. We were loyally and stupidly following an organization of leaders who didn't care about the impact, just that they facilitated the trip. They didn't care about our mental health. Hell, they didn't care about our health, period. Then there were those of us who realized that this was bad. This wasn't good for us, for our minds and souls. If I wanted to make it out alive, and I mean that literally, I had to leave. That was the first stop in my spiritual desert. Pretty soon after I got home, my evangelical subconscious mind training kicked in. I felt guilty for how I left. Even though I was a danger to myself, even though I forked over the dollars to get me home so I could get some stability, i.e. save my own life, even though I was my hero, I condemned myself for not being better and for not being more faithful. And that guilt drove me back to work for this organization in a quote-unquote apprenticeship program. And it was one of those quote-unquote internships where you pay to work for them through support raising. And again, it was for the kingdom, so why not? Fast forward just 6 months, to the summer of 2015. I cracked under the pressure of trying to be a good boyfriend to a wonderful Christian woman with phenomenal taste in home decor. I came out, and every single one of my leaders got a message from the Holy Spirit that it was not my time to continue at this organization. It's funny how that works, eh? I wound up living with my friend Casey, sharing a room in a basement, because I was even more broke and in debt after giving my free labor to this group who called me family. I again found myself mad at God for leading me into a place of nothingness. I did all this for you. I did all you asked me, and this is what I get? Yes, this is what you get, Kevin. You left that place. You are here now. And you asked for this, Kevin. Isn't that interesting? We don't often realize that we've got so much power. We don't realize the spiritual wildernesses, the liminal spaces, the discomfort. All of it is something we asked for. Maybe not even knowingly, but I believe that deep down, every soul wants to know the truth. Every soul seeks its reflection in this physical world. And for a while, we find that reflection in the systems we were born into. We learn to be good little Christian kids and grow up to be good Christian men and women. And if the hegemony surrounds you with American Christianity, you have no reason to question it. Until you do. There are days I miss my old community. However, I could not go back to work or even volunteer with that old organization. I could not dream of shrinking myself to fit their definition of faithful. Even when I was stuck living in that shit-ass basement apartment that I shared with another fully grown-ass man, even during that struggle was better than lying to myself and others to get their approval. I'd rather endlessly struggle to be who I am than easily lie about who I'm not. I no longer blamed myself when I realized that I got myself here. I realized I was the one who rescued me. My conditioning and trauma wanted to tell me that I was unfaithful and God was punishing me. But I was faithful to God. I was devoted to my calling to be my most authentic self, our only calling ever. I was convinced my self-worth aligned with my bank account, what ministry I was doing, and what I could create that was helpful to others. If only I were working harder, I would feel better. That is capitalism, baby. That is a lie. And it's a lie I still catch myself believing and operating from. Leaving a religious space that doesn't help you flourish is the pursuit of God. No matter what they tell you. I got myself here. I got myself out of that place that was killing me. That's so powerful. This discomfort, it's expected. I knew it would hurt to let go. This fear of the unknown, I had that when I was still in the middle of churchland. At least now I'm not ignoring it. So I could complain that I don't have those connections anymore. Or realize that I don't actually want those connections or relationships anymore. This led me to a new question. What do I want? What do I want to feel and do and be on the other side of all this shit? On the other side of the questions, many of which I know are unanswerable, what would be nice? I wanted to feel safe and at ease. I wanted to feel held by a likely benevolent universe. I wanted to do things that made me happy with people who made me happy. I just wanted to be okay. That would be nice. That first year out of the closet grew me up quickly. I feel like I went through my childhood, teens, and 20s all at once. Contrary to what my pastors told me, I feel like I am closer to whatever or whoever God is than when I was trying to be a straight worship artist who was merely desperate to be loved. This feeling of peace, this feeling of continuous joy, this overflowing kindness, the sense of connectedness to everyone and everything, none of it is an accident. None of this is magic. It's math. Said another way, it's all cause and effect. if you do a thing, something will happen. When you keep up a habit, something changes. It is no different with your thoughts and emotions. It is no different in your spiritual life. It takes a bit of focus, but a spiritual practice faithfully followed over time will yield to you all the wisdom you could ever need, all the peace you could ever want, and enough love to heal you and everything around you. When I say spiritual practice, I mean the actions you take each day to return you to a sense of connection with your divine self. The part of you that is love herself, is source, is all, is God herself, is your highest self, is the universe, is an enlightened being, is peace. What you call it does not matter, only that you do. It only matters that you figure out a way of connecting to that source. Your spiritual practice is the things you do physically to allow you to access, cultivate, and manifest what you want to feel spiritually. And honestly, what's the difference between what you feel spiritually and physically? I don't think there is one. I do not mean the casual tarot spread, or the meditation class you went to one time, or even that one retreat that allegedly transformed you and got you spiritually high. I'm not talking about the love and light, spiritual bypassing, whitewashed and commodified Eastern religion you see on Instagram. I'm talking about sitting your ass down for 5 minutes at the top of your day and breathing. I'm talking about intentional meditation and movement. I'm talking about learning to feel, honor, and let go of your feelings. I'm talking about grieving what you've lost in a way that will help you find what you want next. I'm talking about connecting with your ancestors. I'm talking about figuring out what your people believed before colonization. I'm talking about unpacking your privilege. I'm talking about taking responsibility for your own happiness and well-being. I'm talking about creating a sustainable thing that you do every day that makes you feel so good that you can't wait to do it again the next day. I'm talking about the things you can do when you are so deep in the pit of despair that will light the way out. I'm talking about letting go of the shit that still hurts and doing what makes you come alive. I'm talking about what makes you bloom. I'm talking about the real nuts and bolts of this spiritual stuff. And I will not lie to you, when you start your spiritual path, when you begin undoing all the toxic beliefs you've held just below the surface of your conscious mind, it feels hella painful. You will feel better, but you'll feel more of everything. This is slow work, and we're so impatient with the process. So many of us want magic, meaning we want something outside of us to fix us, and we want it to fix us now. We think it's the programs and the books we read. We believe it's in our natal chart and the three crystals in our pocket right now. Or if we can get the correct belief, if we can understand the proper theology, then we will feel good. It will all make sense when we accomplish being a good, deconstructed person. Here's what I wish I had known at the top of my journey. A bad theology will kill you, but a good theology will not save you, because none of this is about right belief. It's not a program you finish and you're certified whole. You are not broken. You are not evil to your core. Needing to armor yourself with virtues to keep your evil juices from leaking out into a world that is also corrupt and bad for some reason. You don't need saving because you were never in danger. You don't need to get found because you've never been lost. You've been asleep. I'm here to gently wake you the fuck up. What I'm offering you is a practice that, when consistent, will lead you to clarity of mind, peace in the body, and hopefully, a perspective that may bring some beautiful, luscious, floral poetry into the landscape of arid wilderness that has been your faith. It is a practice to remind you that you are whole, and it is you who will get yourself there. If you've been wondering how to recover after spiritual abuse, after losing or having to leave your old spiritual community after the church kicked you out, if you've been desperate to feel that feeling you felt in those old spaces, the real connection you had with those real people, if you've been angry about missing it, or sad because you haven't found nearly anything as meaningful as that, if you're ready to heal from that shit, this is for you. This book shares with you the ideas and practices that finally led me to lay down a lot of my shit. I may introduce you to some seemingly new ideas, but none of it is original. I am an amalgamation of great teachers, yogis, theologians, and practitioners. So know that we are standing on the shoulders of giants. Or perhaps we are standing among a great cloud of witnesses with our great ancestors alongside fully realized ones who help teach us what it is to remain and abide in love. For me, every moment comes back to one question. What must I do to return to peace? I wait, listen, and then do what is presented to me. And then I evaluate. Did it bring me peace? And if yes, I mark it as helpful. If not, I let it go. Early on in my exploration, I tried on a lot of new ideas and practices. However, I kept returning to the same few things, stillness and movement. Meditation and stilling my mind got me to a place where I could finally stop the anxiety of my conscious mind and drop into that peace. And when I remembered that it was possible to feel that, I could quickly return. The more I practiced that feeling of peace, the more I committed myself to do things that kept me there, the more I remained in that feeling. Life seemed to blossom, and my problems seemed to shrink against the beauty of the world as I saw it with clear eyes, seeing how it worked together to keep everything, including me, alive and moving. Learning to move my body in ways that felt good was also a pathway toward greater levels of accepting all of me. I leaned into hatha yoga, lifted weights, and swore off stepping on scales because I no longer wanted my idea of health to be dictated by bullshit. I started taking walks, sitting outside, and listening to the trees. I took the same mindfulness I had on my meditation cushion into the rest of my work, the working out, and the relationships I was keeping. Peace. Even when shit was hitting the fan. Peace, despite the fact I didn't know how I would get the bills paid. Peace, before, during, and after the Trump White House. Peace, that passeth understanding. The very last chapter of this book will offer some very practical how-to for creating your own practice. But every chapter between here and there will offer glimpses as well. But the essentials are already clear. Stillness, presence, breath, and movement. Miracles. One of the most significant changes in my life was finding A Course in Miracles, a metaphysical text from 1975. Penned by the scribe Dr. Helen Schumann, A Course in Miracles gives a delicious theological discourse on living without separation from God, a workbook for students who wish to test the ideas out, and a manual for teachers who want to help others find their path back to God. One of the wacky things Dr. Schumann says is that this all came out when she heard a voice from within say, "This is A Course in Miracles. Take notes." And she did. And out popped this collection of texts. Oh, and the voice? She says it was Jesus Christ. Yes. That Jesus Christ. That made me pause and want to run and hide all at once. I didn't need another text or holy book.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?